Good afternoon. Transportation Policy and Finance Committee meeting will come to order. Members, we have several bills today we'll be hearing. First, if have a motion to approve the minutes of February 16th.
So moved.
By Representative Nash moves the minutes of February 16th. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. These minutes are approved. Representative Lewick, you are up on the list first. Welcome to the committee. And Representative Lewick, I will move House File 516, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes. And we now have the bill before us. Representative Lewick, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for this opportunity to bring this bill forward. What this bill would do would be to take the general sales tax, 6.5%, that we currently collect on tires, and move that over to the highway user fund. What I propose would be to phase that in over 3 years, so we wouldn't do it all at once, and to begin that basically this year. Once we've got to 100%, then it would operate thereafter at 100% of those dollars. And just right up front, I don't have a fiscal note yet on that. There's other similar bills on other products. I know that the folks in the tax committee are working hard on that, so I'm sure there'll be a question on that, but I don't have that. To get into sort of the concept here, probably one of the first and biggest questions is, well, gosh, why would we look at general fund money to use that on roads and bridges? We don't want to run around and copy other states just because they do it. But that is not unique. 33 other states use some portion of general fund dollars and put it toward transportation. We have in sort of bits and pieces over the years. This would be a little more sustained effort. There's a concern that this would be very volatile, that every 2 years the legislature would come in and possibly change it. Certainly that's always an opportunity or a danger. I firmly believe, though, talking to the folks in my district, they look at this as really basic. You're not going anywhere without gasoline, and you're not going anywhere without tires. And there's a direct relationship there to roads and bridges in our automobiles. So I think if we can get this in place, I sense that it'll be a tall order, short of some horrible economic catastrophe, that we would be back here trying to claw that money back and send it off in another direction. This is one where I want to reiterate again, I kind of learned a long time ago as a kid, you clean your own house up first. And this is dollars that we're collecting right now. So this is not a new tax. And sometimes people get that confused. I'm not in the new tax camp at this point, particularly on a gas tax. This is something I think that we need to look at and ultimately make a decision on before we even have a discussion on whether we need to push up the gas tax. And I say that after a lot of thought, because if you look at our constitutionally guaranteed approach here on gas tax, on one hand, it's going to the right place. On the other hand, literally all powers of government are doing their best to literally push the gasoline out of the automobiles we use today. So if you're looking long way down the road here, just frankly, I'm not ready to bet on the gas tax as being a real long-term solution, because we continue to force that up. We're literally hurrying the day where there's going to be less and less automobiles out there burning gasoline, and those that are out there, as we saw, will be so economical, we're never going to catch up on that. So I really believe we need to look at new funding sources. I know, Mr. Chair, you've got a lot of bills before you. I don't have any testifiers on this specific bill. I would be happy to stand for questions. Be mindful of your time and the committee's time. You've got a busy agenda here.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. Any questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I met with Representative Lewick this morning to discuss not so much a concern with this bill, but an issue that I would like to bring up at this time, and that is while we strongly support getting more money into the transportation fund and especially the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, we are concerned that this money would be funneled through that formula, through the constitutional formula. The reason for that is that cities under 5,000 population don't directly benefit from funds that go through that Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. Right now we have 147 of Minnesota's 853 cities who actually are qualified to be in the municipal state aid program. So that leaves a lot of cities out. And furthermore, the cities that do get state aid are spending a significant portion of it on their cost participation in MnDOT and county projects. So again, we support the idea of getting some more dollars, but we want to make sure that we contemplate where they go.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from members for the testifier? Thank you very much. Anyone else care to testify on this bill? All right. Yep. Representative Lewick, final words?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. I would like to second the comments that we just heard, although this doesn't solve that problem. I've got one of those districts that's got a lot of those cities that struggle with that, and I would certainly support at some time that we take a look at that. At the risk of opening that up, there is a huge amount of smaller cities in rural Minnesota that deal with that issue. But I'm one of those kind of keep it simple guys at this point. So with that, I just want to recognize that a problem was brought up here that we should try to address in some way, shape, or form. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 516 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have House File 441, Representative Swedzinski. Is he here? All right. We will... where's Scott? We're going to delay yours. Okay. Go right to Earhart. Representative Earhart, are you prepared to go?
Yes, I'm going home right now because I don't have my papers with me. I'm kidding. I'd rather eat my sandwich.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. And do you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move, if I find the number of it here real quick, House File 324.
To be referred to taxes, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Earhart moves House File 324, be recommended to pass, and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Earhart, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we have going on in the world right now is that everybody is conserving electricity, gas, every else thing they can do. They're insulating their homes and they're putting out very efficient dishwashers, air conditioners, light bulbs, and so forth. You know what has happened now to the utility companies? Let me tell you about Xcel. they did such a good job of conservation, and they got to the point where they in the consideration for additional increases in rates, they are suggesting that they don't have enough people to buy their electricity anymore, so they're going to raise their rates a little to compensate for that. Well, here we are in the world of transportation where our supply of revenue is decreasing, and so we have to find some way that we're going to raise additional revenues. And this is an idea. By the way, was that, did everyone get a packet with, or didn't they?
I don't believe so.
That could have been delivered. Maybe not. Oh, here they are.
We have the pages here. There we go.
This is a description on here. I'll wait till you get it. But what we're about on these charts are the amount of the market share of new car sales in the United States, and specifically the low mileage cars, all the way from pure electric to hybrids. This is the hybrid. The first. These are not necessarily in order, but the first chart with the blue bars is the hybrid electric vehicles as a market share of new car sales. That has increased from 1999 to 2014. So you can see, except for the brief downturn when nobody was buying anything, 2010 and 11 there, it's been increasing pretty much every year. So that means that this is a growing problem that we have to be concerned about, and that's what this bill is about, at least that you're thinking about it. We also have the breakdown of on the multiple, three colored chart, the hybrids and the plug-ins and the pure electric. I think I may have that in reverse order. Mr. Burris, the BEVs are which one now?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, BEV refers to the battery electric vehicle, so that's the all electric. PHEV refers to the plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, and then HEV refers to just the straight hybrid without the plug-in capability electric vehicle.
Well, you can see that the hybrid electric vehicles are the ones that are have been growing the most, and we're in 2015. There's now three million of these on the roads. And it's going to continue to grow. California, I think, has the most low mileage vehicles between these three categories on the road now, and they are working on this. Don't know if anybody's come up with a solution. And the last slide shows the breakdown by the various hybrid electric vehicles by model, and you've got everybody's making them, and they're going to continue to grow. Now, what this bill does then is to try and compensate for that lost revenue by the bill calls it a recoupment surcharge that's provided in a further paragraph here. That's 1.11 where it describes it, and go over to 2.26. J, recoupment charge is calculated as specified in the following surcharge schedule. The fuel economy is the combined miles per gallon or miles per gallon of gasoline equivalent as estimated by the United States Environmental Protection Agency for the appropriate year, make, model, and transmission and engine configuration of the vehicle. So that's how we're going. And what it does, if in fact you're going to skinny through with not paying or paying very little tax because you're not buying gasoline, and we need that, we're going to suggest that you ought to contribute to the wear and tear on the roads. And we don't have, now, I would stop for the second and say there's a mileage-based suggestion that I've also put forth in another bill. We've already done a study on that. And that may be ultimately the way you we end up, some form of mileage-based. Now, of course, someone has also put in a bill. I don't think he's here. He doesn't like that. And there was an argument in the paper back and forth between early this week on one side and the other side. But the point is, that seems to be, if we perfect the technology and satisfy the policy of who gets followed and who doesn't get followed by the devices, that may be the ultimate answer, but we're not near ready for that yet. And in the meantime, we've got to find the additional money either through raising the gas tax one way or another, or the other fees that we normally use. This seeks to bridge the gap as we drift away from gasoline use, and that is the essence of the bill. There is a fiscal note with it, which says that in 2017 there'd be a biannual total from this of 2.4 or 3 million, and in 18, 4.8, and a biannual total in 2019 would be $9,730,000, if I'm reading this right. And I think you all have that. There is a problem with that I talked to Department of Vehicle Services on, and guess what? We don't have the software or the computer to monitor this. Nothing new going on over there, but that's what they're telling me. So maybe 2017, which is what the, I think that's what the fiscal note says. So unless we want to do it with a pad and pencil, it's going to be difficult to launch this. But we better start launching something, and so this is a wake call. Now, I know that everybody in town who has a automobile dealership or owns an automobile factory, if there's anybody in town, or that, I don't know if Tesla's going to be building here or not, but anyway, they're opposed to this, and I'll tell you that right off. I welcome them to be opposed to it as long as they come up with some other solutions, instead of just saying, oh, no, we can't do that. It's going to ruin our car sales. Well, foolishness. They're going to keep on buying cars no matter what. But we got to figure out some way to finance the roads that they're running on. I have no other thing to say particularly. So, questions?
Members, questions for Representative Earhart before we get to testifiers? Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart. So, two questions, really. One, you have mileage here of 34 and below for your at zero, and then 35 goes up. I know your intention is to capture this for electric cars and hybrids and things, but there are a number of conventional cars that get that mileage, too. What's your comment on that?
Representative Earhart.
I think, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that the thrust of this is that, and I'm sure that mileage will improve conventional cars. But if we're not collecting enough money for the people, that's what I was trying to suggest to you by telling you what the utilities are doing. Xcel wants to raise its rates to satisfy its bottom line because they've so clearly convinced the public that they should buy special light bulbs, they should re-insulate their houses, they should all their appliances are now classified as to the energy they use, and about everything else is moving toward energy savings. And we're going to have to capitalize on that by saying how high should we want to set the bar. If you want to set it at 40, you know, that's another matter.
Mr. Chair, the follow-up question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will specifically not affect any motorcycles or, as you probably know, there are a number of different three-wheeled vehicles that are out now that are licensed as motorcycles. It will not affect any of them, correct?
Well, not as its present state, but if you'd like to add that in.
No. No. No, Mr. Representative Earhart, I don't need to add my motorcycle in on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for members? Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Earhart. I am looking at a few of the handouts here, one of them by the Auto Alliance, in which a few of the bullet points read, I'll just read them here. The introduction of both internal combustion vehicles with advanced fuel-efficient technologies and vehicles that run on alternative fuels should be incentivized to help drive consumer acceptance and market demand. Then bullet point three, consumer choice is a key factor in driving competitiveness in the marketplace, and state policy should not penalize Minnesotans. Then number four is there is a minimal consumer acceptance of highly efficient vehicles. An additional fee on this type of alternative fuel vehicle only penalizes the consumer. Then another handout here by Drive Electric Minnesota, there's one line in here that reads, a similar concern, by establishing fees on fuel-efficient vehicles like plug-in electric cars, the bill provides a disincentive to EV ownership. And I am wondering if you could address, do you believe that these concerns hold any validity, that increased costs as a result of government action can act as a disincentive for consumers to engage in behavior?
Representative Earhart.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative, the problem is that if we don't take care of our roads, they're not going to have anything to drive on. And it's as simple as that. So if you got another way of doing this, I want to hear it. And I've said that to the people who put out the first letter. Let's not sit around and say, no, no, no. Let's be creative about it. I've been creative here. I want to keep our roads in condition. I want to keep safe driving for everyone, not just the electrics or the gasoline burners, but whatever. And that's what we're looking at as we slide downhill with the efficiency. It's one way it's nice to save the energy, but on the other hand, how much energy do you think it takes to charge that Tulsa? He's not here. How much energy does it create by the coal-burning factories that crank out electricity to charge the electric cars? That's also a consideration. So as we go here, we got to find a way to take care of our roads, and that's where we're at.
Senator, sir.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart. I agree with you. In fact, I made that point here a week or two back in terms of asking the question that electric and hybrid vehicles are not necessarily paying their fair share in relation to the wear and tear that they're creating on the roads. But the question I'm asking you is, do you believe that there's a valid argument here that government action, increasing costs on consumers, disincentivizes people from engaging in behavior?
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I think that a lot of government actions that probably could be done away with, but one of their charges is that they are supposed to build the infrastructure and take care of roads and bridges. And we couldn't allow that everyone to go their own way on that, so it does take some regulation. So if it does some of the things we talk about, it does it, and we move ahead.
Any other questions for members? All right, I do believe we have a testifier. Ms. Nairn, is she here?
Oh, it's you again.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sandy Nairn. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. The Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers is a trade association of 12 of the largest car manufacturers in the world, and it includes BMW, Fiat Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, Jaguar Land Rover, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Mitsubishi, Porsche, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Volvo. I had to look to make sure I got the list right. And we appreciate the chance to be here today. As some people have mentioned, there's already a letter in your packet about this from the car manufacturers. I wanted to raise a few additional points that weren't raised in that letter. The federal government and many state legislatures across the country right now, including Minnesota, are undertaking the difficult task of trying to figure out how to properly fund your transportation infrastructure. And as part of that discussion, some of you are considering revising the funding mechanism that you've historically relied on to pay for some of the roads and bridges. Car manufacturers don't normally enter into these discussions about how you should fund your transportation system. We think that's within the purview of the legislature. But we do have concerns when there are when vehicles are treated differently based on technology. We do have concerns about that. And for that reason, we are here to raise concerns about Representative Earhart's proposal to impose an increasing surcharge tax on vehicle owners based on the fuel efficiency of their vehicles. House File 324, first of all, is, as Representative Uglum mentioned, overbroad in its application. It does not just tax fuel-efficient electric vehicles or hybrids. It also will tax gas vehicles. Car manufacturers have entered into agreements with the federal government to significantly increase the fuel efficiency of all vehicles. And as a result of that, many gas-powered only vehicles will be, if not already, have some of the fuel efficiency that's indicated in Representative Earhart's bill. So yes, gas-powered only vehicles will be brought into this, and we'll have to pay this surcharge. Secondly, many, if not most, of the alternative technology vehicles affected by this bill already contribute significantly more tax revenue to the state than do the average vehicle by paying more in sales taxes and paying a higher registration fee, which offsets a lot of the loss to the state. I think the drive electric handout that you have gives you an actual example differentiating a Ford electric vehicle versus a Ford regular sedan, and all the increased sales tax that is paid and additional registration tax that is paid. I think it was over $1,000 just in the first year of ownership that the electric vehicle paid into the state treasury beyond that. And of course, some of you are familiar with one of your colleagues who owns an electric vehicle. I will wager that the sales tax that he pays on that he's paid for his vehicle and the increased registration taxes he paid probably far exceed any of the gas tax that any of us pay on our vehicles throughout the entire life of the car. This proposal would be the first of its kind in the nation, and we think would send an inconsistent message. The purchase of advanced fuel-efficient technologies that run on alternative fuels should be incentivized. 37 states, including Minnesota, in fact, already do incentivize various kinds of fuel-efficient vehicles. Minnesota recently passed legislation requiring investor-owned utilities to offer consumers discounted rates to charge electric vehicles during off-peak hours. So we believe that state policy shouldn't penalize Minnesotans who purchase one vehicle over another. And then lastly, we think it's inconsistent with state energy policy over the last number of years to to treat these vehicles differently. We have tried to encourage legislation to power vehicles by using domestic energy sources in Minnesota, and Minnesota has certainly been a leader in this regard, and we think this may send an inconsistent message in that regard also. So for all those reasons, we would ask you to use parity in the way you fund different vehicles in any transportation package that you come up with. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Nairn. Just a couple of questions, Representative Petersburg. Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to answer one point here. I think that you're essentially right, but when you can buy a gasoline-powered car that is probably 35 or less for the same amount of money that he paid for the electric, there are big, fancy cars.
That's true.
Right. So that is, and that big, fancy car is going to go right on with the gasoline engine and stay in for a long time.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Nairn. That's one of the key points that I was going to talk about, too, is that we have this idea that because there's more sales tax and stuff paid for, that automatically compensates for the consumable price of gasoline tax. But we do have cars that are the same equitable price that are also burning gasoline and pay those fees as well. And I think one of the things that you talk about is consumers of products should be incentivized. But what about their consuming of the highway system itself? Aren't they also consuming that, and aren't they getting a special break on that consumption of that as well? And I think we need to keep everything on an even playing field when we talk about actual dollars and whether or not the incentive should come at the cost of transportation system or the cost of the cars and commerce itself. So just for equity's sake.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I would disagree with what you said. As I've mentioned, though, the way this bill is presently structured, it will treat gas vehicles. They will pay the surcharge also because they are becoming more and more fuel efficient based upon the agreement the car manufacturers have entered with the federal government to make all vehicles more efficient. So this is kind of a unique proposal, unlike what's been considered in other states that have gone directly after electric vehicles.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I strongly oppose this bill. We'll get into that maybe after the testimony, but I have a question for Ms. Nairn. You had mentioned alternative fuel vehicles, and we'd be sending the wrong message to our farmers and our ethanol industry here in the state by supporting something like this, because it seems like this is not only flying in the face of some of Representative Garofalo's legislation last year that we passed, which incentivized these vehicles. We've also had, dozens of years of incentivizing alternative fuel vehicles, ethanol industry, et cetera. Do you think that this would send the wrong message to our agriculture community involved in ethanol?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, and I alluded to that in the last point that I brought forward, that it is inconsistent with some of the energy policies that you've passed here in prior years to make us more dependent upon local sources for energy. Biodiesel mandates, ethanol mandates would both fall under that category. And many states, of course, are incentivizing other forms of alternative vehicles, whether they be natural gas, hydrogen, or whatever. So it does cost the industry a lot of money in R&D and an additional cost to produce these cars. And the federal government and others have asked manufacturers to spend the money and effort to do this. So we do think this does send a little bit of an inconsistent message to not only to the industry but to the farmers, as you've mentioned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Nairn? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, let's say on the outside chance that House File 324 ends up on the bottom of the parakeet cage. You represent an industry that has quite a bit at stake here. In the transportation and road maintenance, road construction. Do you have any alternatives to offer other than this here? Because we're pretty stuck in this committee as what to do. So if you really have a pony in this race, we'd like to hear from you as far as alternatives.
Ms. Nairn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, I'll be glad to talk with you about some ideas that have come forward before. As I mentioned, the car manufacturers don't generally take positions on funding one way or the other unless we feel that it discriminates amongst the different technologies. But I certainly can share with you ideas that have been brought forward in other states on more fair ways to fund some of the costs of running your transportation system.
Representative Sundin?
Thank you, Mr. Hello. Chairman. I'd be happy to see that at any time.
All right.
Thank you, Ms. Nairn, for your testimony. Ms. Backus? I think we're... Yeah,
thank you.
No more questions. Thank you very much. Please state your name for the committee record.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and members, I'm Amber Backus with the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. Wasn't planning to testify, but when the author, good author here, invoked our name, I thought I should come to the table for just a moment. We are a part of the Drive Electric Minnesota Coalition and are opposed to this bill for the reasons outlined in our letter, not the lost sales and lost revenue from the lost sales of EVs, if this were a disincentive, but also just to point out that in the short term, we do think this is a money loser for the state's transportation fund, as many of the electric vehicles cost $12,000 to $15,000 more than their conventional counterparts. That does bring in additional sales tax and registration fees that could be lost in the short term if the sale of these vehicles were to be disincented. We are interested in talking about ideas and other ways to pay for transportation, and I could share that in five other states that have instituted a surcharge on electric vehicles. It's been nowhere near as high in this bill, but those states do offer incentives for the purchase of electric vehicles that have really spurred that market, and we have some good studies that show that. So if there was some combination of factors there, that might be something we're interested in, but just to disincent and have a discourage consumers from purchasing them with a surcharge right now of almost $100. We're not in support of.
Thank you, Ms. Beck. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Are there any other testifiers? Please come on down and state your name for the committee record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And I just wanted to clarify what Representative Earhart and I did discuss. I did talk to him so that I could explain our fiscal note as to why we said that we would need some time to be able to implement this. We have talked to our vendor that we work with to be able to calculate the registration tax. And at this particular time, they do not have the fuel economy information that would be able to implement this bill at this time. They, at this point in time, and that's why we have in our fiscal note, we talk about the fact that we would have to work with other groups and gather statistics even to be able to calculate the taxes that would be needed based on this. So we tried to give as best we could the information as to what we think the costs would be, but the issues are related to the fact that our vendor that we work with would not be able to do it at this time, and we couldn't find any other states that are doing this either. There is not another vendor that we know of that would be able to provide us with this information. Right now, in terms of fuel economy, with the vendor that we've talked to, 67% is the highest, and 20% is for other years other than 2014 vehicles. And so we'd have incomplete information in terms of miles per gallon. So I just thought I'd provide that information as to explain what our fiscal note states and the reason why there would be a delay in terms of us being able to implement the bill.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. I do have to ask, would the Minlars program, if it was up and running, be able to accomplish this?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, no, because we wouldn't be able to get this data that we would need in order to be able to do it. The data is not accurate in terms of anything below 2014 is 67% of that information is available, but it is not available for all the vehicles that would be needed on model years since 2000, and that's why I wanted to explain it, that those would be the reasons why we would not be able to do it. There certainly would be additional programming needed, and I'm not stating that there wouldn't be. There would be additional programming needed, but we would need at least to have that time in order to be able to calculate this. We could not find another vendor that had information either in just doing a this isn't our business to be sampling this information, but we went through the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrations, and there's no state that is doing this, and they did not have any information that they could guide us into anything different than what we have looked at. We also did some research using the EPA website as well.
Thank you, Ms. McCart. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier. The bill strikes me, with all due respect, Representative, the bill strikes me as being akin to charging a kid extra for getting an A in class, or charging the horse that won the race more for winning the race. My question relative to the fiscal note is, and I saw a number of the assumptions that went into it, but the point has been made that these vehicles many of them pay a substantially higher sales tax, they pay a higher registration fee. Was that taken into account in calculating the fiscal impact? Was the prospect of reducing the number? We've got folks here from TV folks, right, that put this on TV saying now there's going to be potentially, call it what you will, but a higher cost or a penalty for driving a vehicle that gets extra mileage that is currently not in any other state. If that goes into effect and it reduces the number of sales, how does that impact the fiscal? I know, Representative Earhart, I know you want to drive greater income into what's spent on our highways. I'm just wondering if this has a perverse opposite effect and potentially brings down the amount of revenue that comes in. Is that reflected in one of the assumptions?
That's what they're worried about.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, yes, if you look at the page where it talks about the revenues, obviously this is just the best estimate we could come up with, but it does show that there would be a loss of revenue in the funds, the Minnesota Transit, the Metro Area Transit, and the Highway User Distribution Fund, Distribution Fund.
And, Mr. Chair, to that point,
Representative Atkins,
I'm guessing that was just the best guess you could come up with, because you don't have any other state to rely on. It could be substantially higher. It could be there's a very difficult time talking, very difficult calculus determining what that figure would be.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, that's why I wanted to testify, because this was the best information we could come up with. We did talk, as I said, to AMBA. We spent time with the EPA and worked with them as well. But this was the best information that we could come up with and our best estimate. But it is just an estimate because AMBA confirmed that there isn't any complete information at this point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I strongly believe that these vehicles are paying their fair share or more when you look at these MVEST statistics. But I just want to be very clear, Ms. McCormick. We're looking at potentially a hit to the taxpayer here rather than any, a wash or revenue for the state. Is that, given all of the different variables that you mentioned, both in your fiscal note and beyond that, not having the proper system set up, I mean, this could cost tens of millions of dollars to implement. Is that correct?
Ms. McCormick.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, we are only looking at it from the cost to, we are mainly talking just about the costs that are required from our department and in order to implement this. It's hard to tell. That was why we did try talking. We talked to AMBA to see if there was any information out there from any other states and we were not able to find anything that would really would make me feel that I would be able to knowledgeably answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, we don't want to hang a new computer system for DVS on this. Now, come on.
Any other questions for the testifier? Thank you, Ms. McCormick.
Thank you.
Mr. Carney, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Hi, Bob again, Carney Jr. I'm a registered lobbyist, lobbying on behalf of We the People, an informal association. We'll get you my lobby number. We don't have it right now. I'm in favor of this bill. I just want to make 3 points. First of all, the dollar amount that we're not talking about per year is not very significant compared to the total cost of buying one of these vehicles. So somebody's not going to decide not to buy one of these things because, oh, I'm going to get hit with a higher registration surcharge. That's not going to happen. But that revenue is going to come in every year once the vehicle is sold. Now, the logic that's being used for funding transportation is that we're trying to find things that are related to transportation, make sure that roads and bridges are being paid for. We're going to have more alternative fuel and more fuel-efficient cars as we're going forward. So now's the time to get something in place on this, and the fact that the Minlar system is being done right now is simply another reason to say this is the time to get it done, because this is the time that system's being built. Now, that's being contracted out to programmers in Minnesota. That's the report from an earlier committee hearing. So if this is done, this is just one more selling point that the vendors of this software have got to sell to other states, since this is the first state that would be doing it. So the logic is here. You know, in terms of getting the funding for subsidizing energy, that's an environmental issue. I'm in favor of subsidizing these vehicles as long as it doesn't come out of the transportation fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Any questions from members? Or any other testifiers from the audience or any individuals who would like to testify? Representative Earhart, your comments. I'm sorry. Representative Earhart?
I guess maybe before his closing argument, I just wanted to make a quick plea that the committee vote down this bill. I think that Representative Atkins, I think, said it very well. You know, we're penalizing people for doing the right thing. Conserving energy is the right thing. You know, I hope the true conservatives will join me on this, because that's the direction our energy policy needs to go. Secondly, we're getting money through the MVEST fund through this. I mean, Commissioner Zelli testified to that. We had other testifiers that mentioned that. So, you know, I think these cars are paying more than their fair share, actually. We've had some points made about wear and tear on the roads. Small energy-efficient vehicles are not causing wear and tear on the roads to the extent that the big trucks are. And, of course, we're going to have that discussion on Monday, Mr. Chair, I know. So I don't want to get into that. But the disproportionate wear and tear on the roads are not caused by a Prius or some of these other vehicles or a Chevy Volt. And then finally, I think this point about reversing direction that we've done bipartisanly as a state, in both incenting these vehicles and incenting alternative fuel vehicles and our ethanol industry, I think are really compelling reasons to take a hard look at this. Again, this is unprecedented in the country. I think it moves us in the wrong direction in terms of our energy policy. There's a very, very, in fact, I think not even minimal gain that we have to the state. In fact, it might even be a loss of money, because we don't even know how we're going to implement this. And so for all those reasons, Mr. Chair and members, I hope that we'll vote this down and you know, move forward on the real work of our committee, which is to really come up with a funding package that really moves us forward. And this is not the way to do it.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, that was spoken like someone who is sincerely involved in owning a electric vehicle, all electric, I think.
I, Mr. Chair, I don't own an electric vehicle.
Oh, you don't? Intel is wrong. A hybrid.
I think you just talked yourself into one. Buy it.
Representative Earhart, any other final comments on your
paper? We actually were going to close. We were going to include bicycles in this because Representative Bernardi talked me out of it. So now I just you people some of you act like this is not going to be a problem, and I'm trying to bring it to your attention that it is a problem, and there is action in other states. And I've asked all of I've done that on other things with the automobile industry. I say, well, what have you got for a help on street? What kind of street districts? What do you call districts? They were against that, all the automobile dealerships, but they never could come up with an answer of any type, and I asked them every time. So the door's open for a lot of suggestions that, but let's keep it in mind because it isn't going to go away, and even bicycles deserve a look.
Representative Earhart, I appreciate you bringing that to attention. It's good conversation. At this point in time, the chair will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in a bill at a later date.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move on to House File 441. Representative Swadzinski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will move your House File 441 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And we have the bill before us. So, Representative Swadzinski, tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill, in a short synopsis, takes the percentage of taxes collected from long-term or short-term lease and rented vehicles and simply takes the money that is currently being deposited into the general fund and dedicates it towards the Corridors of Commerce program, which was started in 2013. The Corridors of Commerce, obviously, I think a lot of the members know what that does, but it affects projects across the state from Highway 14 to projects up in War Road to Highway 69 to Schnelling Avenue. And it's proved to be a very unique project. It's affected the southwest part of the state in a very positive way with passing lanes on Highway 23 and looking at different projects around the Wilmer in conjunction with potential projects out in the Marshall area as well. And it's pretty a straightforward bill, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Questions for members? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Please state your name for the committee record.
Bob again, Carney Jr. again. I am again lobbying for We the People Informal Association, and The logic here is the same, of course, as the taking a look at the auto parts. The point is that we have to do something to fund roads and bridges. And looking at something that associates tax revenue with something that is specifically related to transportation is an appropriate logic to apply there. So for the same reasons as Representative Howe's bill and the earlier one today on tires, we need to take a look at how to get this additional source going for revenue for transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Any other questions from members? Any other testifiers? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Swadzinski. So it's talked about as though this is going to go to the court to fund Corridors of Commerce, but is there actually language in the bill? The summary doesn't say Corridors of Commerce.
Representative Swadzinski.
Mr. Chair. Oh, it does. There it is.
Sorry. If you look on the bill itself, line 3-3.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Representative Bernardi.
I'll be brief, and so I'm not necessarily going to ask a question, but it just seems that this is a little bit of a shell game. Do we know what we're taking it from the general fund? And then the other issue is MnDOT does have a process to identify projects, and some projects that haven't even been on the 20-year plan, I understand, have been pulled in. You know, this isn't how we've generally done business in the past, and so to preempt the planning process that engaged people around the state of Minnesota. I don't know if this is setting good policy, even though it's going for a good cause. So I just wanted to comment.
Representative Szczynski, any comments?
Well, you know, I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Bernardi, you know, looking at the projects that are moving forward, obviously I think every single district has different needs and different wants that we represent. I do believe that we do need to try to stay as close to some of the planning, but plans do change. Population densities change over time, and, you know, sometimes things happen that are beyond our control. And, you know, as this process moves forward, I will definitely take that into consideration. Appreciate your thoughts on that.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to start sounding like a broken record on this. Some of us are old enough to remember records, right? you know, but on the one hand, I applaud this. I think, you know, corridors of commerce is great, and I obviously will always support new revenue and revenue for transportation. On the other hand, taking it from the general fund, absent us, you know, supporting new dedicated revenue, I think is problematic. So I'm going to start. I told Mr. Marble I sound a little like the father and fiddler on the roof. On the one hand, on the other hand. But I think that's the dilemma that we have with bills like this, and I think we're having a lot of bills like this as I look at the agenda. So again, I think I applaud, you know, your support of Corridors for Commerce. It's an excellent bipartisan effort that we've done over the last few years, and so thank you for that. But again, taking from the general fund, I think, to support this could be problematic.
Yeah. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that note, Representative Szczynski, or perhaps it goes to fiscal staff, where would this money actually be booked out of? Is this coming then out of the surplus? Projected surplus of the $1.02 billion, or where would we actually, if we were to do this today, where would those funds be extracted from and placed into this account? Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, if this were to be enacted, I would imagine if it was in the tax bill, in terms of the committee targets, it would come out of the taxes area. If it was in the transportation bill, it would be an increase in the general fund target to transportation. But where it comes from in the general fund is a decision of leadership.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Lee, then, if it did not happen, this, what is it, Chris, $50 million, is that the number? That $50 million, where would it go if we did not do this?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, wherever the legislature would want that general fund money to go.
And if we made no changes at all, does it just drop to the bottom line then?
Mr. Lee. Chair and Representative Atkins, correct. If the legislature does not appropriate more general fund dollars for something, then it sits right in the general fund balance.
And that was, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lee. That was kind of the calculus that I was doing as well. It seems to me that, and I think this is a fine idea. It seems there's a nexus between the two. But let's not fool ourselves. I mean, what we're doing is we're spending money that would otherwise go into either the reserve or the cash flow account. We're spending general fund dollars that come out of the reserve on transportation. Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Anyone else in the audience like to testify on this bill? Okay. Hearing none, I will renew my motion that House File 441 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Representative Szczynski. Representative Koznick. Representative Koznick, would you like to move your bill?
I do. Thank you, Chair Kelly and members of the committee, for hearing this file. It is tradition of the body for new members to provide treats when the freshmen first present their first bill. So as such, it is Girl Scout cookie time, and I welcome you to enjoy cookies from Lakeville Girl Scout Troop 25523. My 8-year-old daughter, Claire, is actually still a brownie, and my 7-year-old daughter, Carly, she's a Daisy Scout. So they'll be happy they would be happy to sell you some more cookies, and you know, once I meet my quota, they might even make a trip down to floor session to thank you personally. But I am proud to bring forth this bipartisan bill that, with your support, will become part of the transportation plan that we're asked and tasked with developing. House File 710 deals with tax funds that are currently generated when a person leases a motor vehicle. The original intention of the motor vehicle lease tax was to allocate half the funds towards Greater Minnesota Transit and the other half to the County State Aid Highway Fund for metro counties of Anoka, Washington, Carver, Scott, and Dakota. The bill reaffirms that the collected revenue is distributed as intended for roads, bridges, and buses. The distribution arrangement was agreed to as a way to offset an increase in the sales tax in the metro counties for transit projects that mainly originate in Hennepin and Ramsey County via CTIB, or the County Transit Investment Board. Our bill distributes all the revenue from the lease tax and the 50-50 allocation between Greater Minnesota Transit and metro county and the metro counties mentioned. Currently, the first $32 million of funds generated are absorbed into the general fund, and funds over $32 million are supposed to go into that 50-50 allocation. And originally set aside that the first $32 million was scheduled to expire in 2012, and that was supposed to provide qualifying tax filers with a tax credit to offset the increases in the new gas taxes passed in 2008. And I'm not sure that those credits were ever transpired. The forecast for the lease sales tax generated for fiscal year 2015 is just under $70 million. So I think we can all agree that we need to reprioritize transportation funding both in the short term and the long term. Our support of this bill does this with a current and dedicated funding stream without increasing taxes or higher fees. And these funds were originally created and intended for transportation to help folks across the state of Minnesota, both in Greater Minnesota and the suburbs. Suburban families, over 1.2 million Minnesotans, have been paying more than their fair share of increased gas taxes, sales taxes, property taxes, and fees for the last 7 years, and are facing more increases again. Taxpayers deserve what had been promised to them in 2008. I think it's time to finally deliver on the promises made in 2008 to rural and suburban Minnesotans. I ask you for your support in House File 710.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. So we do want to move this bill.
So moved.
Okay. Representative Koznick moves that House File 710 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. We do have an amendment. Representative Driskowski, I'm going to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My amendment would create a small cities assistance account in the Special Revenue Fund that would provide, actually fill a need for transportation funding that the legislature has not done yet, and that is those small cities in the state, and I have to remember exactly how the amendment was drafted. Those cities under 5,000 don't have similar access to transportation funding from the state that those cities over 5,000 do, and many of our rural counties and districts, that's all we have is cities under 5,000. As a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, my district, I don't have a city over 4,000 in my district, and so these cities have been attempting to access state collected transportation dollars as the larger cities and other jurisdictions have and been unsuccessful in doing so. So this would create an account, and then, as I understand, maybe Mr. Burris can remind me how this works, but we would take the rural portion of the money that is directed as such in Representative Kosmic's bill and place it into that account for road and bridge projects rather than for more rural transit, which, you know, we do have some transit in rural Minnesota that helps elderly and disabled folks get to where they need to get to, and I think we need to continue to fund that the way we have, but certainly I don't think we need an expansion of rural transit, but instead we need to take every transportation dollar in rural Minnesota that we can get and put it in roads and bridges. So this would accommodate that. And Mr. Chair, if you would entertain it, Mr. Chair, I don't intend at this point to offer the amendment, but I merely wanted to talk about it, and I know that there's someone here that would like to testify on behalf of the amendment. Can we do that, Mr. Chair, without offering the amendment?
I think we can do that. Why don't we have the testifier come down to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Todd Olson with Metro Cities. I had an opportunity to discuss this with the amendment author this morning. Appreciate the intent here to shine the light on this issue. As was stated earlier on a bill earlier by Ms. Finn from the League of Minnesota Cities, this is an issue across the state. Even in the metro area, there's over 60 cities that don't receive any aid from the state for transportation dollars. It's a big city issue. It's a small city issue. We all have municipal systems we need to take care of, and trying to find a way to steer some state dollars outside of the constitutional formula is something that we would like to continue to work on, and we appreciate the intent of this just to help shine a light on that. So,
thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm confused, and I just need some clarification. As I'm looking at the underlying bill, it's taking funds and putting them into half go into transit for Greater Minnesota and the other half into the state highway fund. And so I'm not understanding how the amendment, which is about cities, so if I'm understanding, I mean, it seems to me there are other places in transportation bills where we fund cities of larger than 5,000, and I would understand why you might be forwarding that amendment at that time, but I don't understand why you would take it from Greater Minnesota Transit or the County State Aid Highway Fund for cities, which is not what this money currently is being used for. So I'm not understanding the amendment, and maybe I'm not under, I mean, I'm new to transportation, so it might be really obvious, but I'm not seeing the connection here.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Norton, I'm still working on the composition of this, and I didn't actually realize we had that many small cities in the metro area, but certainly as you look at rural Minnesota, the great abundance of cities is represented in these small cities, and I don't know how many we have out of the 853 cities we have in the state. How many of them are small cities? I would venture a guess probably half or more are, and all of those are in rural Minnesota. So as I mentioned, Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, I'll continue to refine this proposal, but we are realizing that the small cities, and where I come from we call them towns, do not have access to these funds, and that's what this first draft of this amendment attempted to do. And certainly those small cities in the metro area have a similar situation. And so Mr. Chair, Representative Norton and others, I will be bringing a bill forward to do something like this. It may look different than this, but I hope we can have the discussion.
Okay. So Representative Drazkowski is withdrawing his amendment this time. Mr. Olson.
Just for clarification's sake, the number of cities, there's roughly 850 cities in the state, and approximately 700 are under 5,000. So.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this amendment, and I think the broader bill, you know, points to, you know, the ongoing problem we have with, you know, how we fund transportation here. You know, we're pitting rural roads versus rural transit. I think the bill itself also has some issues in terms of some divisions between Hennepin and Ramsey versus other counties. And, you know, again, I had mentioned this a couple weeks ago. We had the One Minnesota Conference. You know, we are One Minnesota. And I think now, as we start to get into the nitty-gritty about how we're going to fund, you know, put together a bill and start doing, you know, the hard work of funding transportation, we're seeing everyone's advocating for their interests. That's part of the process. I understand that. I respect that. But unfortunately, we're doing it at the expense of someone else. And so I hope that we can address this issue, Representative Drazkowski, you know, perhaps with some new revenue that's not on the table. But I think taking from transit to support this. We have important Greater Minnesota constituencies, particularly the elderly and others that rely on transit, and taking from them for this is, you know, I have concerns about that. But you're also right that, you know, we have cities under 5,000 need support. So hopefully we can get that support, but not at the expense of others. And hopefully we can have Hennepin and Ramsey involved in increasing amount of MVEST as well as supporting the needs of Dakota and other counties. So, you know, I hope that we'll keep all of this in mind as we move forward.
Well, I think it's important to note, Mr. Chair, Representative Horstenstein, it's important to note that originally, as I understand it, the particular creation of this revenue source was to offset an additional tax that was imposed on the metro counties that we've been paying on since 2008. Like I mentioned, over 1.2 million people in the creation of CTIP, in which I believe about 84% of the capital projects are in Hennepin and Ramsey County. Hence, they were excluded from participation in this revenue source. And, you know, I'm trying to represent my constituents, but I think it's a good bill for all of Minnesota that we provide more funding that was originally dedicated and created for transportation, specifically back and reprioritize that.
And
Mr. Chair, I agree. I mean, there's a case to be made. I don't dispute the case that Dakota County had made initially and some equity and fairness issues there. But as this fund increases, and now, you know, I think we're going to be up to $85 million, there may be now room to include the entire metro. That's my point. And, you know, I certainly understand where your county is coming from on this. But as this pie expands, maybe there's room for others to you know, be able to fund needs as well.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that
Dakota County wants. I'm just saying, let's look at some of these other counties.
No, I appreciate the comments, and I guess I would look at the history of the distribution of the fund, and as it was intended, the counties have been getting shorted and shorted, and current plans continue to push off, reverting back that first $32 million. And my argument is that it's time to do that now, as we have the big transportation discussion. And as I also mentioned, these counties are facing pressure and increasing taxes and other transportation plans, but also from within our own counties to generate more tax revenue in other sales taxes. And so we're getting it from both ends, and I think we'd like to have it as it was originally intended, and that's why I brought the bill forward.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was asking Ms. Dalton if she had certain figures, but here's what I'm looking at. How much of that money is created in Hennepin and Ramsey? I think proportionally it's a very large share. And now you're asking us to fund other things with it out of the area when we don't get any. So if you want to get right down to it, that's a bunch of baloney.
Representative Johnson, Representative Kosnick, you have a
well,
comment?
As I did some of the research in here, looking at the different times the motor vehicle lease was talked about, it's consistently been stated within the bills to have a 50-50% allocation, and I'm simply asking that. You know, you took some courage to provide the funding mechanism in 2008, and where we've been paying on the sales tax portion of it, and we'd like to appreciate the revenue that was generated and intended for the counties in Greater Minnesota. I think it's a great bill for Minnesota all over.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Mayor Hart,
who has we been paying for it? You think Hennepin and Ramsey haven't been paying for it? And most of it's coming out of Hennepin and Ramsey. That's what I'm telling you, Hennepin and Ramsey County. That's what I'm trying to tell you. When you say we've been paying for it, yeah, we have been paying for it.
Representative Kosnick.
I appreciate your comments.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, is it appropriate to still ask about the amendment, or? Okay.
Well, we've withdrawn the amendment, so we're moved on to the greater bill.
Then I'd just like to make the point, though, that the question that I will just quickly speak to the amendment. Then. The question of funding for roads in small cities is an important issue, and I'm on to that. And I hope the bill that comes through this committee gives me an opportunity to vote for that. I also, though, think that, you know, this business of pitting rural transit versus rural streets is, you know, is nonsense. And I hope we can find another way. So I guess I'm asking Representative Draskowski. I'm willing to work with you on solving the issue with respect to the streets of the small cities. Let's not do it at expense of rural transit. There's got to be a better way to do that.
Representative Draskowski, why don't we finish this discussion on the amendment?
Right, I want to. I do look.
Is this on the withdrawn amendment?
I will look
right.
Forward.
Okay, just so we're clear, it's on the withdrawn amendment.
Well, I will look forward to that discussion. But as we look at, I think we have to be honest, as we look at the needs in rural Minnesota, the needs are roads and bridges. And that's the priority. Those are the needs to further expand transit in rural Minnesota, to make more and more rural Minnesotans part of that system and develop a similar system to what we have in the metro area, I don't think is the future of where we need to go. But we do need to make certain that the disabled and the elderly have adequate transportation. Beyond that, my opinion is that in rural Minnesota, we need road and bridge money. That's what we need.
Okay, thank you, members. We are moving on to testifiers. We have Ms. Reinhardt. Commissioner Reinhardt, thank you for being here. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Victoria Reinhardt, and I'm on the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. And I am here today speaking in opposition to House File 710. I want to make it clear, however, that we at Ramsey County are not in opposition to the additional $32 million that currently goes into the general fund, going into the Greater Minnesota Transit Fund, and increasing transportation funding in the metro area. What we are opposed to is the fact that the state's two most populated counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, and largest employment centers are left out of that funding formula. And basically, you refer to 2008, and that's when a handful of legislators crafted the language of what you have before you today and wanted to make sure that they garnered enough votes for the new transit and transportation funding formula. Ramsey and Hennepin counties have not received any funding that was allocated from the leased motor vehicles receipts from that point on. It was pointed out that in 2008 the legislature voted for the sales tax, when in fact what you did was you authorized the counties to take those votes. And five of the metropolitan area counties did take those votes. Two did not. And CTIB was formed, the County's Transitway Improvement Board. I do want to point out, just so you have the information in front of you, that every project, for example, in Dakota County that they have brought before CTIB has been funded. Scott and Carver are not part of CTIB. They did not vote for the sales tax, and they are still included in this. So even within, when you talk about the metro area and you talk about CTIB, Ramsey and Hennepin counties are two out of the five that voted at our county boards to impose that tax because we needed to have this money in order to fund our projects. So the money then is that comes into this is a lot of it is generated in Hennepin and Ramsey counties and splits the funding, however, between the remaining 85 counties. Ramsey County has the highest percentage in the state of citizens that are at or below the poverty level. In fact, there are some pockets where where over 40% of the population is at or below the poverty level. Over the past few years, we have made huge investments, and we appreciate the support that we've gotten in transit, which is the primary mode of travel for these individuals. The Green Line alone, I'm sure you have heard many times, has over 41,000 riders a day. Nearly 50% of our region's transit riders live in zero-car households. And I know that that seems odd when you look at the whole state, but that is the fact. They are very much transit-dependent. They need those transportation and transit options to get to work, to school, to shopping, etc. Ramsey County also has a high percentage of tax-exempt property within its boundaries. We have the state capitol and the administration buildings. We also have a large number of public institutions for higher education.
churches, nonprofits, and they don't generate any property tax. We are the smallest county geographically in the state, and we are the most densely populated county in the state of Minnesota. We have only 5.5% of our region's land mass. We have 18% of the total population base, 520,000 people. We also have 20% of the region's total jobs, 320,000 jobs. We have the highest job density of any county in the state, with 2,067 jobs per square mile. Hennepin is second at 1,520 per square mile, with no other county in the state of Minnesota above 310 jobs per square mile. Clearly, I think what we're trying to impress upon you is the fact that the economic hub of Ramsey and Hennepin counties is very important to the state. We need to be able to get people to jobs. We need to be able to move services and people. And we need to provide access to folks that are coming in for services and goods. So, Mr. Chair and members, you can clearly see by the facts that I just mentioned the tremendous transit and transportation needs we have and the heavy reliance our people and businesses have on these systems. This is why we need to be part of any funding stream that the state provides. So please look at all of these facts, and I know that we also have a Hennepin County engineer here to speak to this bill, but I would be happy to stand for any questions at this point as well.
Representative Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the high usage of folks in Ramsey and Hennepin counties that use transit, and I'm just thinking to myself, out in the metro areas, we don't have as much access, so people are more likely to, potentially do a long-term lease on cars and whatnot, more likely to own a car and have cars. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you know the percent of people, or if we can find that information in Ramsey and Hennepin County, that actually do pay into this tax, the motor vehicle lease sales tax. And then, because I'm just looking at the formula and the allocation, if Ramsey and Hennepin were included and it was based on population, I'm wondering if, there'd be a way to do that based on the actual percent of folks that pay into the tax versus population. So I don't know if you have the information or know if we can find it.
I'm looking to my staff. Apparently we do not have that information. I do know that the current funding formula based on population, which is in the metro area anyhow, that Ramsey has 17.8% of the population and Hennepin has 40.6. I think it is fair to say that there's a lot of money that is brought into this fund that is not being distributed in any way back to our two counties.
Sam Whelan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To me, that would be helpful information to have if it's possible to get that, but that answers my question for now. Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Reinhart, sorry. So are you proposing an equal sharing? I mean, if this bill were to go through, would you be looking to try to equally share amongst all the collar counties and the seven metro counties?
Commissioner Reinhart.
At this point, I think that we would really, we just want to have a portion of this. And I know that there is likely going to be other proposals brought forward that would lay out an exact formula, but we want to be part of the funding formula. Would it have to be exactly based on population? That would be the assumption, but it would not have to be.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner Reinhart, what is the sharing arrangement in with the CTIB tax?
Commissioner Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Runbeck. What we have done at CTIB is the projects go through the process of when they are ready, what counties are asking for which projects, and so it's not based on a strict percentage that goes back to each of the counties. It's based on the projects, and so we act as a five-county region. I don't know when I could get the exact number that has gone to Dakota County, but I do know that each project that they've asked for, CTIB has funded. There is a certain amount of money that goes to each of the, I know it's Washington and Anoka.
Oh.
I'm looking at my staff here. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're not giving me any answers. But it's not based on a percentage that goes to each. It's based on the projects, but there is a dollar amount that's given to some of the counties that don't have projects that are shovel-ready.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, my point is just that I think there are other funding streams and that Ramsey and Hennepin do benefit, you know, to a greater extent than the other counties. So just wanted to make that point.
Any other questions for Commissioner Reinhart? Oh, no. Okay. Great. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Mr. Grube from Hennepin County. Welcome, Mr. Grubbs. Please state your name for the committee record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jim Grube, spelled G-R-U-B as in boy E. I'm the Hennepin County engineer, responsible for the roads and bridges for Hennepin County. Unfortunately, I can't speak with intelligence as it relates to CTIB and the transportation aspects in terms of specifics, but certainly I would offer to the committee members, as you consider the concept of transit, either in the metropolitan area or across the state, you certainly have heard many times from Hennepin County and its commissioners and its representatives regarding the pledge and the commitment Hennepin County does have toward moving people in many different ways, including transit as one of the primary ways of moving people through corridors and through regions. I'd also offer to you that support goes to Greater Minnesota, where a number of our commissioners at Hennepin County have long been supporters of the rural transit system, trying to help folks find ways to be successful in moving people in Greater Minnesota. From my perspective as a county engineer responsible for Hennepin County's roads and bridges, I share that responsibility with 86 other counties, 86 other county engineers, if you will. And as we're looking at the bill proposed in front of you, we don't necessarily at Hennepin County disagree with the bill, but we do ask for consideration of that component where Ramsey and Hennepin counties are explicitly stated and excluded from the distribution of the funds via the state aid fund. And that's why I'm here today to discuss with you that issue. As the county engineer responsible for Hennepin County, just like the other 86 counties across Minnesota, we find ourselves responsible for roads and bridges in a manner where the demand for the funding far exceeds the amount of funding that we have available. And that's why you're here today, and you've been talking about ways to enhance transportation revenue to all the cities and counties across the state. When you consider that Hennepin County is certainly from the population perspective and the amount of revenue generated via Hennepin County, in Hennepin County, certainly the largest in the state. But I'd also offer to you that there are approximately 20 cities in Hennepin County whose population is under 5,000 and has been the subject of conversation about the smaller cities and what do we do to support them. And as Hennepin County is before you today, talking about and asking for consideration that we be included with the other five counties and Ramsey County for all seven metro counties to get that portion of the state aid funding. You can see that even though Hennepin County has 45 cities, nominally 20 of them being under 5,000, is still in that wheelhouse that you're talking about for the smaller cities. As we look at it from Hennepin County's perspective, trying to balance all those needs, Hennepin County has over $260 million of unmet needs that have been brought forward to it specifically by the cities that make up Hennepin County, notwithstanding those we already have funded, over $263 million. From our perspective, my responsibility, we have 540 miles of county state aid highway, and 36% of them are over 50 years in age. We've been hearing quite a bit about the older and worn out highways across the state itself. Hennepin County is no different than any of the other 86 counties in that regard. A significant amount of its road and bridge system is 50 years or older. Almost 50% of the cities that make up or comprise Hennepin County are under 5,000.
and we understand that. We have a rural economy, and we have a dense urban area. So, Mr. Chair and members, I wanted to make that point for you to let you know that Hennepin County certainly supports the conversation that has been ongoing regarding transportation, meeting the needs yeah. of the people in both greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area. And we thank you for getting the opportunity to speak to you today and ask you to, if you would, consider to include Ramsey and Hennepin County in that component. I stand for any questions, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Grub. We'd like to hear from our last testifier. We do have one other bill that we'd like to hear today. Representative Atkins, is that okay to... thank you, Mr. Grub.
Thank you.
Commissioner Beard. Welcome, Commissioner. Welcome back to the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's good to be here. Odd to be in this seat. I'd rather be over there with you guys, I think. No, I wouldn't. I'm just kidding.
Well, he's having some regrets, Mr.
But, Mr. Chairman, I'm here. Mike Beard, first of all, Scott County Commissioner, here speaking on behalf of and in favor of House Bill 710 and thanking Representative Kosniak for bringing this forward. First of all, just kudos to our friends at Hennepin County, Engineer Krub. We're doing the major roundabout, the river crossing, and I appreciate that Hennepin County has worked well in a three-way with Carver and Scott County to make sure that the old 212 down the hill by Flying Cloud becomes a major commuter route, the secret way to get across the river whenever 169 is plugged. Thank you for your efforts in helping us with that. Mr. Chairman, I know we're running a little short on time, but I feel compelled just to give a brief history of how we got to this point because of the comments that have been made. Maybe it'll be just helpful as we think about moving this bill forward and why we've done what we've done. Back in the 70s, before we actually paid sales tax on automobiles, there was a hue and cry that we needed more money in transportation and particularly a sustainable form of transportation funding that we could count on. Gee, we should extend the sales tax to automobiles, and we could dedicate that to transportation purposes. Well, it took us almost 30 years to get that done. We just never really did it. It went in the general fund, and boy, once money gets in the general fund, it seems to be stuck there. But there is a philosophy that we've had in Minnesota for the last 100 years that user fees going to a specific purpose, like roads and bridges, for instance, makes a lot of sense. So we tax gasoline, we tax tires, we tax license plates, driver's licenses, and then the sales tax on automobiles, and that helped pay for things, except until the constitutional amendment, we never totally dedicated the motor vehicle sales tax. Well, slipping outside of that was something called the leased vehicle sales tax, which still went into the general fund and apparently was not covered by the constitutional question. And so now we're having the same debate over again, it's like deja vu, about the motor vehicle sales tax. So when we were having the big discussion in 2008 about more money to transportation, we're going to raise the gas tax, we're going to do CTIB, we're going to do a half a point for roads and bridges and transit, a quarter for each in the seven-county metro area, a hue and cry was raised, and in that rough and tumble time, the quarter percent for roads and bridges was dropped, and the quarter percent for CTIB stayed. From my perspective, we dropped the wrong quarter. Had there been a quarter for roads and bridges and a little bit for gas tax, I might have even voted for the veto override and wouldn't have had to pay anything for my vote. I would have done it just because it's for roads and bridges. But we didn't. We got CTIB. And part of the grand discussion at that time, part of the consensus that was built, and I might add that I was not the chairman of the committee at that time, was that we would take this motor vehicle sales tax that was all going to the general fund, and we would reserve $32 million of it to the general fund, and the rest of it, which was like a paltry $5 or $6 million, we would divide half to rural transit, which was looking for more money, and half to the five collar counties. And I don't remember much of the discussion about why Hennepin and Ramsey were left out. The hue and cry about just the five collar counties didn't seem to be that relevant at the time, but then it wasn't very much money at the time either. And, oh, by the way, CTIB was promising to build train lines to everywhere for basically Hennepin and Ramsey counties. So it seemed to be an agreement that everybody could sign off on. So here we are all these years later. We've got a couple of billion dollars of investment in Hennepin and Ramsey County, which I don't begrudge them very much, but it is what it is. And in the meantime, we've got a new transportation policy plan from the Met Council that seems to be reorienting the transportation investment dollars that come through the Met Council from the federal government to inside the Beltway, leaving the suburbs pretty much stuck with an old concept that was a very good one called the interregional corridors, corridors of significance that actually tie the state together through the hubs that are Hennepin and Ramsey County. I'm speaking of Highway 52, Highway 61, Highway 36, Highway 65, Highway 10, Highway 55, 212 in Carver County, and 169 through Scott County. All the infrastructure that goes around building projects there are picked up by the counties, the frontage roads, the backage roads, the things that make the interchanges work as MnDOT is building those corridors. But getting the federal dollars to do that now, we've got extra hoops to jump through thanks to the new transportation policy plan, which means those dollars are a little bit in jeopardy, I would submit. So the idea, since we have a budget surplus, since this will come off the bottom line, the idea of taking the extra $32 million now and applying it to that original agreement back in 2008 just strikes me as a pretty reasonable discussion to have and a pretty good bill to pass. It means something to Scott County, about $1.7 million a year. That's not even the issue. The issue is that the suburban counties that have to pick up this infrastructure that apparently the Met Council has fallen out of favor with, we get a tool in our toolbox to help pay for those things. Oh, by the way, there was a comment made that Scott and Carver actually get a little bit from CTEB even though we don't participate. Accurately, no, we don't. We actually go to the meetings. We pay $5,000 for the membership rights to come to CTEB and sit there as ex officio members. We get to drink their coffee and eat their donuts. It is good coffee and are good donuts. And we appreciate the chance to be in the loop about what's happening. But to be clear, there are no CTIP dollars that come to either Scott or Carver County. So, members and Mr. Chairman, I would speak on behalf of Scott and Carver counties, and I think I speak for all five of the caller counties, in support of House File 710, that you'd move it forward and continue to have the discussion. And I would encourage you not to be in so much angst about where our friends in Hennepin and Ramsey County are. They're going to be just fine, and we promise to play nice in the sandbox and build good roads through our suburbs so people can get to and from the cities. For that, I'll be happy to stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Beard. Representative Atkins, do you want to ask your question now?
No, he made the point exactly. Better, actually, than I would have been able to. So thank you, Commissioner Beard.
Well, you're welcome, Representative Atkins.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't your two counties that you're referring to have the right to raise sales tax and for transportation needs as the other counties that you're mentioning, Ramsey and Hennepin, have done?
Commissioner Beard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart and members, yes, actually we do. In fact, we can raise it to a half a point. Like the other 82 counties that aren't in CTIP have that right privilege to raise that tax for transportation projects. If it's a road and bridge project, they have to specify it, and it's for a duration of the project. If it's for transit, they can just raise it. I don't know that Hennepin and Ramsey can do that other than the 0.25%, which yields about $100 million a year for Hennepin and Ramsey.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was referring to the fact that your county commissioners can do the same thing that was done here in the other 82 counties, 82 or however many we got now.
Yes.
And why don't you, if you want extra money?
Commissioner Beer.
Mr. Chairman, that's a tool in our toolbox. I'll tell you, it is on the table for it is an active discussion right now because we have to create the plan of work that it's going to fund. I can't speak for the other four commissioners. I can speak for this one that I look fondly on the opportunity. And I'll be supporting it when we get the plan of work put together. But yes, that is a tool in the toolbox that also provides money for Scott Carver.
Thank you, Commissioner Beard.
Thank you for having me back in front of the committee again.
Absolutely. We do have a couple more testifiers. Members, we will be hearing our last bill on a week from Wednesday. Next.
That would
be a waste of
time. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Sherry Menyon. I represent the Minnesota Public Transit Association. It's a statewide association of bus operators that is mostly in the rural areas, but it also includes metropolitan area, such as the suburban transit providers and smaller systems like the Anoka Traveler. I'm here today specifically to address Greater Minnesota Transit and just want to make a strong case for dedicating the $32 million for transportation, with no less than 50% going to Greater Minnesota Transit Systems. So we appreciate the fact that the bill is in front of you today. I do want to remind members that we have some statutory language that I think most of you know about, trying to meet the needs of Greater Minnesota Transit, which have been well documented. We have numerous cities and counties who are supplying transit to their residents. So we again ask for consideration to continue the dedication for that minimum 50% to be in Greater Minnesota Transit. As we move through this process, the 50-50% split being split upon 80 counties translates into an average of $200,000 per county. So we are not oversupplying funding to Greater Minnesota for transit services. Greater Minnesota Transit Service has a special place. In fact, they are very efficient in their services and they meet several needs. They bring citizens to work, shopping, medical appointments, children to schools. In the large urban areas, they serve college campuses. And we're starting to learn that because of some of the education funding issues, college campuses are rethinking their investment, the contract they have in certain communities busing students, which will put more pressure on those communities to supply the funding to make up for that deficit. In addition, Health and Human Services provides non-emergency medical transportation, and they have found this to be very expensive in many cases, and have found it to be more cost-effective to collaborate and use our small Greater Minnesota Transit services. I won't take more of the time. I know we're running late, but Greater Minnesota Transit is very effective, very efficient. They work very hard to keep the costs down. They use a large number of volunteers in Greater Minnesota. The lease vehicle revenue to date that's been distributed has made progress. As you know, we were supposed to meet 80% of the need by 2015. We'll have met 63%, and we'll have gone from 61.5% to 63% because of the increased revenue of lease vehicle. And the same is true for capital investments have been a significant improvement. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Munn. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of four of the Ring counties and 10 of the greater Minnesota counties, primarily in the regional center. Obviously, both of them benefit from the procedures of this bill, provisions of this bill, and we thank Representative Kosnick for its introduction. A lot of questions have been raised here about why this provision for these counties without really enlightening you on why there are other special provisions that take care of other counties or localities. As I think particularly your freshmen will need, regardless of whether we're talking about school aids, local government aids, county aids, or transportation aids, there are a number of special provisions to meet the needs of individual localities that aren't met under the general, and this is one of them. We've had a lot of discussion about, Hennepin and Ramsey County are not getting back what they're paying into it. First, I will tell you that the sales tax statistics that are being quoted are based on where the tax is collected, where the retailer is located, or where the return is filed from. It does not denote who the actual individual is who paid that tax. And since they have a significant retail presence, it somewhat overrepresents the tax that's being collected in that locality. We've talked about the CTIP grants, and I think we should just go through the actual numbers for the last 3 years. Of the $140 million of capital grants, which are the main financial provisions of the entity, In 2012, $140 million was given to the various localities. $130 million went to Hennepin and Ramsey County. 2013, another $28 million of grants was budgeted for, and $25 million of those went to Hennepin and Ramsey County. The last grant that was authorized back for 2014 was exclusively to projects in Hennepin and Ramsey County. So you'll see that the existing quarter cent goes largely to benefit those two center counties. This lease vehicle tax is the quid pro quo to provide both transit and the means to commute for the residents of the Ring counties. What also was not mentioned, as I may have said, there are other special provisions in the law that speak to other localities. Hennepin County is one of them. There was a special provision put in the 2008 bill relating to the distribution of what's called the turnback account or the flex account. Historically, or what was the pre-law amount that went out, was 85% Greater Minnesota, 14% for the metro area, and Hennepin County would have gotten a respective share. With the new revenues that were authorized in that bill, it was split 50-50 between metro and Greater Minnesota, and then of that 50% share for the metro area, Hennepin County received 35% of that, or an additional $3 million a year. So there are other provisions that address their special concerns.
Mr. Carlson, I apologize. We have another committee coming in, so okay. If you could wrap this up.
I'll wrap it up. The same thing exists within the county state aid formula for other counties that receive certain minimum distributions. In conclusion, this bill, you know, addresses the needs of the residents of these areas who are not served by the largely rail projects that are being promulgated by CTIP. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Okay, please come to the committee. Please welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the committee record. I apologize, we have about 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Dan Larson today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. We're 29, an organization advocating for the interests of 29 counties in Greater Minnesota. Here to state our policy, a little different twist perhaps than what you've been hearing today. So dedicating we support dedicating all revenues from the motor vehicle sales tax on purchased and leased vehicles for transportation purposes, and that all non-transit revenues be dedicated to the highway users tax distribution. So, in effect, our focus this year is to get as significant, our ongoing effort is to get as significant amount of new revenues into the highway users tax distribution fund, which is the way that's recognized as the most equitable, fair, and fairest, most efficient, and equitable way to distribute transportation revenues. Mr. Chairman, I want to be mindful of time, but given time constraints, that's our position. I want to recognize the organization that brought this bill to you. We have a great deal of respect for, and want to, it's with, I think, mixed amounts of equal portions of mixed emotions and resolve that we bring this policy forward to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. I appreciate the brevity. Members, any further questions? Representative Kosnick, final comments on your bill?
Yeah, thank you, members. I know we're up against time. I just want to thank you for the hearing. And, you know, the bottom line is that there was an agreement made in 2008 to these counties. And like I said, the 1.2 million suburban families or suburban people in the suburbs deserve to have their part of the agreement made and met. Thank you.
Okay, so Representative Kozik renews his motion that House File 710 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Next meeting, Monday, in room 5, 223, we will hear the one bill, the truck weight bill. So this meeting is adjourned.